Welcome to Mystical Dispute, the Limited Magic the Gathering Debate Podcast. I'm Garrett Gardner, a.k.a. G-Guards.
And I'm Carl Chase, a.k.a. Two Duck Cubed.
Today, we are going to have a
preview battle
for Kamigawa Neon Dynasty.
And Garrett, I know that you and I have talked about this many times, and I think I've mentioned it one or two times in the podcast, but preview season, kind of not my thing. I have always looked at preview season as like the preseason in the NBA. Like, sure, there were a lot of trades last year and maybe some free agent acquisitions, and your team's got a bunch of new players and you're really excited to see how they play together. But at the end of the day, it's the preseason. It doesn't mean anything. Anything we're trying to conjecture or figure out means nothing until you play with the actual cards.
In my opinion, I think preview season is so much fun, but it's because everyone gets to make wild, uneducated guesses as to what's going to happen in this brand new format. I mean, I don't have the best track record myself with predicting how powerful cards will be.
Lantern Bearer, 12th best common, so saith Garrett Gardner.
But are people really that confident when they say what the best commons are going to be? I mean, things shake up so much, and it's the chaos fuels me. I love it.
Listen, I'm all for wild-ass guesses, and that's exactly what we're going to do here.
Oh, yeah.
To be honest, I think the folks that spend the time to try to understand the archetypes, that try to go into the season prepared, they are definitely going to have an advantage out of the gate.
Absolutely.
When you know what a certain color type wants to be doing out of the gate, especially for the first few drafts, that's going to give you some advantage. On the other hand, I do think you got to be careful about going in with too much of preconceived notions because, and we've seen this time and time again, there are just some cards end up surprising you. It's in a different context, in a new set, and you're going to miss something. I think you've got to be open to what happens.
Lunark Veteran.
Yeah, Lunark Veteran, right? Price of Loyalty ended up being the best common in AFR, right? There's things that are going to surprise you, I guarantee it. And so some combination is certainly balance, as always, is the right way to go.
Well, what better way is there for us to enjoy the lighthearted preview season than a cutthroat game, me versus you, where we make these definite predictions and the victor takes all?
We need like one of the anime style graphics where I'm making like two fists and there's stars going at light speed behind my head. But anyway, let's do the battle thing.
All right. So here's the way our game works. We picked five common cards from Kamigawa Neon Dynasty to battle over, one for each color. We're going to predict where each of these cards will rank on 17 lands among commons of the same color when ordered by game in hand win rate.
To play the game, for each card, one of us will set a line and choose a breaking point in the overall card ranking. Then the other will simply choose if they think that card will be over, as in better than, or under, as in worse than that line.
There are 19 commons in each color for this set, so the line will be somewhere between 1 for the best and 19 for the worst. Maybe the best way to do an example of this is to catch us up on the results for the Innistrad Double Feature Predictions Battle.
So, hey Garrett, who ended up winning this battle?
Well, let's go through the cards, and we'll find out as we go along.
Alright, card number 1, we did Lunark Veteran. The line was set by Carl at 1.5. Garrett said better than, indicating that it would be the best common in Innistrad Double Feature, and the result is it was the second best, which means Garrett loses. And I won by a whole 0.2%. Boom! Got him.
I was really catching up with you there in the end. Fierce Retribution beat it out. I guess removal is king, just like I thought, but I flew too close to the sun. The next card was Stitched Assistant, where I set the line at 20.5, and Carl took the over. He ended up being very right, because it landed at number 14. So, 2 points to Carl so far.
2-0 Carl. Next was Eaten Alive. I set the line at 3.5, and Garrett took the over.
And it ended up at number 3, so I got a point. Boom!
2-1, Carl versus Garrett.
Next up, we did the green 6-6 Flourishing Hunter. Carl set the line at 5.5, and I took the under.
And it finished at number 8, which means another point for Garrett.
Boom!
2-2.
Score is tied.
And let's find out how this one finished. Garrett, why don't you do the honors?
All right, So Voldaren Epicure. I set the line at 13.5, thinking that a 1-1 was not going to be super great. And Carl took the over on that. And where did it land, Carl?
He finished at number 7. Carl gets the point and the victory. 3-2, Carl.
3-2, Carl.
Now the undefeated prediction battle champion at 2-0 in matches.
This was a pretty close one because Lunark Veteran and Fierce Retribution were very neck and neck there. So like, got that win there, but I accept defeat gracefully.
We didn't have stakes in this first one, so Garrett gets off scot-free with no punishment at all for losing. This time, there's going to be big time stakes in the line.
Here's my suggestion. The loser has to tweet a beautiful haiku to the winner, lamenting their superior prediction skills.
All right, I'm in. Honestly, it doesn't matter what the punishment is because I'm not going to lose.
Oh.
So I look forward to the beautiful poem that you send my direction.
I can't wait to destroy you on this one because it'll touch my heart to get a beautiful haiku.
So let's get into the battle.
Card 1.
Network Disruptor. Blue for a 1-1 artifact creature, Moonfolk Rogue. Has flying, and when enters the battlefield, tap target permanent.
My take, Garrett, is if ninjutsu's a thing, and if the artifact synergy deck is a strong deck, this card does everything you want it to do for 1 mana.
So my take on this card is I get what it's trying to do. It works great with a ninjutsu, which is a returning mechanic where you can replace an unblocked creature with a creature in your hand, and that creature usually does something when it connects with an opponent. So this does two things. It removes blockers and it has evasion, so you can replace it with a ninjutsu card. But it's going to take a lot for me to accept that a 1-mana 1-1 flying is worth a slot in your deck. But I still think it'll be powerful enough as a support player. I just don't think it's going to be one of the top commons because you can't just fill your deck with a bunch of 1-mana 1-1s that only play offense.
Listen, if ninjutsu's a thing, and I don't know if it is, it's really hard to tell. There's not a ton of common support for ninjutsu. There's some, but there's no Ninja of the Deep Hours. That card was a common back in the last Kamigawa block. And if that card was a common in this set, I would say all bets are off. This thing is off the charts.
And of course, Ninja of the Deep Hours, if you did combat damage to a player with it, you drew a card, which is great.
The ninjutsu cards of commons are not that card.
Right. That's part of my argument is that the cards that I've seen, at least, you don't get like a full cards of value when you hit with a ninjutsu card. So it doesn't make up for the lack of power in the individual card for Network Disruptor.
But if you played with that mechanic, getting down on turn one and getting in on turn two is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, it potentially allows you to get in with the ninjutsu card for a second time on turn three with the tap ability when it comes into play. And it grants you artifact synergies. And a lot of those artifact decks too, like you want to get artifacts down early to help pay for things and to help trigger things and do things. So this one is going to be so dependent on how good the synergy decks are. I think you're going to have to take it as a priority because the number of enablers has the potential to be limited. So again, how good are the enablers? How playable are the other enablers? It's so set dependent, which makes it all the more challenging to predict here, but that's what we're going to do anyway. So Garrett, why don't you start setting the line?
Like I said, I don't deny the synergy of this card, but I do think it'll be placed in a lot of decks where it doesn't belong. So I'm going to set the line at 3.5. Carl, where are you going to put this card?
I think that's a great line. That's exactly what I thought you were going to say. I was hoping you were going to say 4.5, but you didn't. Normally, I'd get concerned about the it's going to go in a lot of decks where it doesn't belong clause, because that can definitely have implications on the 17 lands win rate data. However, I think this is good enough in the things that Blue wants to be doing, and I'm still going to say over or better than.
All right, put it in the books. Let's head on to the next card.
Card 2.
Befriending the Moths. 3 and a white for a saga. The first two chapters have target creature you control gets +1/+1 and gains flying until end of turn. And the third chapter, just like all the sagas in Kamigawa, you exile it and return it to the battlefield transformed under your control. And the backside is a 2/4 enchantment creature with flying.
Man, I saw this card and a lot of the common sagas and I got really confused because this seems extraordinarily slow to me. It's just two very unimpactful things for 4 mana and aggressively slanted, and then you end up with a fairly defensive card that doesn't have haste. We've said it a million times, like the context of this format is going to matter so much, but I don't know how this card is going to perform well. It just seems so slow and antithesis of itself.
As like most cards, context is everything, but I wouldn't sleep on the +1/+1 and flying 2 turns in a row. This could potentially essentially read, get in for 5 damage a turn, for example, in 2 consecutive turns, and that is inherently powerful. Think about a mini original Elspeth, where you play the 4 mana, you give +3/+3 in flying to a creature, and that was inherently powerful, and then it did other stuff too, right? In Elspeth's case, you could make 1/1 tokens. I think it's gonna play like kind of a cruddy Elspeth, which is still pretty good. Obviously, +3/+3 is different than +1/+1. Obviously, a 2/4 flyer is not as good as continuing to have Elspeth in the battlefield, but it's got just aggressive enough of a note and just a good enough body that I think it's got the potential to be pretty decent.
I'm just skeptical because 4 mana is a lot just for a small trick, and it puts you in this racing situation. You better be gaining life or something, because I feel like you're going to lose that race.
That's true. Keep in mind, though, one of the mechanics in white is essentially the exalted mechanic, the attacking alone mechanic.
Yes.
And giving +1/+1 and flying to a creature that's already attacking alone. If you're doing the exalted thing, you've probably got some sort of system set up to try to deal with the defensive side of things if you're only able to attack with one creature a turn. So I think it's got some synergy with that as well. But again, context is everything. I'm going to be a broken record mentioning that over and over and over and over again, but we will have to see. But in the meantime, more wild guesses.
So what is your extremely confident line on Befriending the Moths?
So all that said, I still don't think it's going to be one of the best commons in white. I'm certainly looking at Good Boy Spirited Companion as being one of the better white commons.
What about the pacifism?
Yes, and probably the pacifism as well. I'm sure will be up near the top.
Mm-hmm.
You also just can't put too many 4 mana cards that don't add a body to the battlefield in your deck too. So mm-hmm. The downside is real. On defense, this card is not good.
Terrible.
So with that, I am going to go with right in the middle of the pack for the white commons at 9.5.
All right. I mean, I thought we were going to be flipped on this, but honestly, looking at the white commons, they look pretty underwhelming to me. So I'm going to go with over.
I should have said 8.5. Shoot. All right. Let's go to the next one.
Card 3.
In black, we have Clawing Torment. Black for an enchantment aura, enchant artifact or creature. As long as enchanted permanent is a creature, it gets -1/-1 and can't block. And enchanted permanent has, at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 1 life.
This is another really interesting card because...
Is it?
I think it's really interesting. But you know what? Before I reveal my thoughts in this card, Garrett, why don't you start?
Well, I mean, I read this card and I think it's just completely unplayable. It doesn't kill the creature, and I understand that it's extremely aggressively slanted, but that's a thing I've said a lot on this show. I'm bread and butter. I don't want to imagine that I'm always winning. I'm always beating down. So this is just a blank if you're being hit. I mean, I guess it saves you 1 life a turn.
Obviously, on defense, it is subpar. If you are attacking, it's like 1 mana source to Plowshares and 4 damage to the face. It is as good of a removal spell as you could possibly ask for 1 mana if you are the beatdown. Which comes back to A, are you playing it in the right deck?
Right.
B, does black have the ability to beat down? I don't know yet. Nobody really knows. And C, are the majority of 17 lands users playing it in the right deck?
Questionable.
Or is this somehow making its way into some random control deck?
Black actually looks fairly powerful to me, and it doesn't look super aggressive outside of Chain Flail Centipede is really aggressive, a 3 mana 4 power attacker. And there's also Akiba Reckoner Raid, the 1 mana Saga that drains twice and then gives you a 2/2 menace. So those are both pretty aggressive commons, but the rest don't seem that aggressive to me. Obviously, I agree, like if you're beating down, this just solidifies a win, but even aggro versus aggro, sometimes you need to be on the defense. I just think this card is really bad.
Do you remember playing with Stab Wound from Return to Ravnica?
I do.
That card was pretty strong.
Yes.
And you could just chump block with that card to take away the loss of life. So
interesting.
This one, if the life loss is the most relevant thing to you, it's really hard to get rid of your own creature. Obviously, if you're a ninjutsu deck, you can return that creature to your hand. There's a number of other effects that do away with it.
Because you're never going to block this card when they attack, so they could just ninjutsu it back to their hand. That seems like a big scar on this card.
Certainly, if you're playing best of three, it's something to consider siding out in the wrong matchups as a result of that.
Right. We're doing best of one for game in hand win rates, so I guess I'll draw the line. I'm going to go real low with this one. I'm going to say 9.5.
Well, I'm going to stick with my over or better on this one, even though I do think it's the kind of card that will probably end up being a little bit better than the game in hand win rate suggests, again, due to
misplays, right?
Yeah, just played in the wrong deck. Situational cards, I think, obviously, they have more upside than what the game in hand win rate would suggest. And the more situational you get, the more deviation there can possibly be as a general theme. However, I still think it's going to do better than 9.5.
I smell a full episode in our future.
Me too. I look forward to it. Let's get on to the next one.
Card 4.
Coiling Stalker. For 1 and a green, you get a 2-1 Stake Ninja with Ninjutsu, also for 1 and a green. Whenever Coiling Stalker deals combat damage to a player, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control that doesn't have a +1/+1 counter on it.
And again, Ninjutsu lets you replace an unblocked attacker with this guy. Boom, you got a 2-1. You can put a +1/+1 counter on something.
This kind of hits two keywords or two themes in the set with both the Ninjutsu mechanic as well as the modified mechanic, which cares about whether a creature is enchanted, equipped, or has a counter on it.
And there's a lot of modified payoffs in green, I believe. So I think that's what this card is trying to do. Still pretty understated at 2 mana, 2/1. And in green, I don't see a lot of ways for you to sneak in creatures. Certainly not like there was in blue, like with the network disruptor we were talking about.
Yeah, so I think this one comes down to color pairs, very likely.
Yes.
And obviously in a blue-green deck, if you've got network disruptors, then this could be really strong.
You could even make existing network disruptors into 2/2s, and then they're relevant flyers. So that's definitely a boon for it.
That's definitely a strong pairing. On the other hand, as you look across some of the other commons in green, I mean, that one drop is so important, and the only green one drop is a 1/1 Death Touch, which, yeah, has the potential to get in there, but isn't exactly what you want to be doing with a 1/1 Death Touch. And then outside of that, I'm not really sure, even past the generality of me talking about not fully getting into spoiler season, because you don't know what a set's going to be about until you play it, I'm especially not seeing what green wants to be doing here. It seems like the commons are kind of all over the place.
Well, the fixing in this format seems a little bit higher than average. We have all 10 of the gain lands, and there's a couple decent green fixers, so I kind of wonder if it's the support color like it often is, where it's doing a little bit of everything, but not great.
Yeah, we'll have to see, but that makes it especially hard to grade this card out.
Yeah. Yes, it does. That's kind of why we picked it, right? There was so many green commons and we're confused. This is the most confusing one.
Yeah, so folks, if you're coming somewhere for hardcore strategy content with the most pristine views and best predictions before sets come out, I don't know if you found the right spot. If you come for wild-ass guesses, you found the right podcast.
Where are you going to put the line on this one then, Mr. Strategy Numbers Man?
All right, Garrett, for those of you listening to this pristine edited version of the podcast, what you didn't hear was about a 7-minute break while I try to figure out what the heck I was going to put this line at. What I'm going to come back with is 7.5.
7.5. All right. All right. Looking at these green commons, I have no idea what most of them are trying to do. So honestly, I'm going to go with over just because it's a 2-drop and you need to play 2-drops.
Again, I should have said 6.5.
Well, let's go to the last card.
Card 5.
Our red card is Simeon Sling. Red for a 1/1 artifact creature equipment monkey. Equipped creature gets +1/+1. Whenever Simeon Sling or equipped creature becomes blocked, deals 1 damage to defending player, and it has reconfigure for 2 colorless mana. Reconfigure, you can think of it like a creature that's also an equipment. You can pay the reconfigure cost to put this on another creature, and then when that creature dies, it'll fall off and become a creature again.
Garrett, we're both spikes here.
Yes.
We're not Vorthoses.
Nope.
We're not really flavor people, or, you know, to a lesser extent, we're not really art people.
Yeah, not really.
However, I have never been more excited about the flavor and the art and the essence of a card than any card in the history of Magic than this card right here. Artifact, creature, equipment, monkey. How cool is that card type? And then look at the picture. It's a mechanized monkey that's sitting on the shoulder of some sort of samurai dude, and he is ready to go and pelt you with these friggin' little, like, white balls?
They look like ping pong balls.
They're ping pong balls? Are they snowballs? I don't know. But that monkey is gonna go and do work for you, Garrett. He's doing work. And the card does exactly what it says. When Simian Sling or equipped creature becomes blocked, it deals one damage to defending player. You wanna block me? Boom! Ping pong ball to the face. Take that. This card is everything from a flavor perspective.
I'm just confused about how the most shocking thing in the art of this card is, what the hell is he holding? He's got these ping pong balls. And I'm like, okay, I accept that there's a shoulder equipment monkey. What is he throwing at people? I need to know more. Why is there no flavor text on this card?
It's because it's already got like 1,000 words about what it does. So
that's probably why, yes.
I look forward to the textless Simian Sling at some point that has some sort of overlaid flavor text on there.
I mean, you probably just win any game by default when you cast one of these, just from a flavor point of view.
I love this card so much. I don't really collect cards. I don't collect paper cards, but I'm probably going to own about 50 of these and just, I might just wallpaper my entire room here with Simian Slings. Anyway, let's talk about the card a little bit and what it does from a strategy perspective, as if though that was important when you've got an artifact creature equipment monkey.
Yeah, I mean, this card looks like many of the reconfigured cards, like it's going to be pretty powerful. The downside of equipment is usually if you have no creatures, you have no creatures. It does nothing. But this worst case is still going to be a 1/1, which can attack and block. So I think it's a pretty powerful mechanic. But still, we do a lot of talking about one mana 1/1s on this podcast these days.
We do. I like this card a lot. Again, one drops are going to be important if you've got some random ninjutsu themes. Mm-hmm. The artifact theme could be important. And it's just going to be annoying to deal with. I think the card is going to be as annoying to deal with as a mechanized shoulder monkey would be to deal with in real life.
I imagine my opponent running around trying to grab the damn thing as it just jumps around on rooftops throwing ping pong balls.
And I implore all of our listeners of Mystical Dispute, when you get in for lethal, and specifically because of the one damage, the opponent's got a ton of blockers and the only way you're getting in is just by like sacrificing your creatures to get that last couple of points of damage. Ping pong ball lethal, I believe, is the only way to phrase that particular situation. So please, when you do that, post a screenshot on Twitter, all caps, ping pong ball lethal. Anyway, Garrett, it is your turn to set this line.
I mean, I love the flavor of this card, but I am still a bit skeptical of its power, and I'm also looking at these red commons, and they seem incredibly powerful to me, especially in context of the other commons we've been looking at today. So I'm going to end up putting this one a little bit lower. There's stuff like Cammy's Flare, that's 2 mana to 3 damage to a creature, which is historically great. There's Ironhoof Boar, which is a 6 mana, 5/4 trample haste that can be a 2 mana combat trick with channel.
I think the red commons look by far the strongest.
Yeah.
I'm sure this prediction will come back to bite me, but I don't think it's really all that close, to be honest with you. But again, context is everything. I'm like never right about this before the set starts, but if I had to pick right now, my prediction is clearly that red has the best commons.
Which is what's making picking a line so difficult for me here, because I know you think this card is good, but look at all these other ones. So I'm going to set the line at 4.5.
I think red is going to be aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
We know that artifact synergies are going to be relevant in some form or fashion. And while my head is telling me under and barely, clearly, if there was ever a time to pick with my heart over my head, it's for the artifact equipment monkey. So I'm going over, baby.
All right.
Let's go, Simian Sling. You can do it, little guy.
I feel like I lost on default just because I didn't have faith in our monkey friend.
I think so, too. The monkey knows your lack of faith and will be pinging you in the face with tiny little white balls as punishment.
Well, I'm excited to see who's going to win. I know you've got me pretty much unanimously beat in our history of Mystical Dispute, but I'm feeling more confident this time. I got you on some of these.
You definitely set better lines than I did, that's for sure. But all that matters is where the cards end up.
So how long should we give this? When should we decide the winner?
I think 10 days lines up pretty well with a podcast recording and should be more than enough time to get a healthy sample size of data. So second podcast after the set's release, we will determine a winner.
All right, sounds good. Well, that about wraps it up. So thanks for listening to Mystical Dispute. You can check out our website at mysticaldispute.com. I'm Garrett Gardner. You can find me at twitch.tv/gguards.
And I'm Carl Chase. You can find me at twitch.tv/2duckcubed.
Shout out to 17 Lands for the data. Please check them out at 17lands.com and you can support them on Patreon. Until next time, stay chill.
Adios. I think it's just going to play like kind of a shitty Elspeth. Sorry, I shouldn't swear.
That's right.